Welcome into the Jazz Notes podcast. Ben Anderson bringing this thing back. Excited as we are midway through the NBA offseason. We are getting ready for the FIBA tournament, but we want to relaunch this as the NBA season will be here in no time. And joining me, as he will every week, is Chandler Holt. You know him from KSLSports.com, one of our main content producers. You can find him on Twitter at Chandler Holt KSL. You can find me on Twitter at Ben's Hoops. What's going on, Chandler?
It's going good. How are you?
Yeah, doing well. Excited to get this thing going again, between the radio and what we do at KSLSports.com. We've been very busy, but excited to focus on some original Jazz content again, and a great way to do it, I do think, is on the podcast. If you're listening to it, you've obviously found it, but if you happen to stumble upon it, you can always find it at KSLSports.com. Just click on the podcast tab and you will find it drop down there, and excited to do this. Ideally every Tuesday. We're recording this on a Wednesday, but the goal is to get it early in the week, recap the weekend, and then look forward to what is coming up next. That will be some of the format, of course, the latest news with the Utah Jazz every week, and then a little Q&A section. So if Jazz fans want to send in questions throughout the week, I'll always send out a tweet asking for mailbag, and you can respond to us. So I'm excited to do that as well. That was the previous format, and I thought it was pretty successful. So I appreciate everybody who jumps on. And then, of course, Chandler, thank you for jumping on and helping as well.
Of course. Exciting stuff. Let's hop into the FIBA. What have you thought of FIBA Hoop so far?
Yeah, it's just in the exhibition stage for the Jazz. But you have five players. In fact, the Jazz are one of the more well-represented teams in all of the NBA because of the number of the players that they do have competing in FIBA. And we'll get started fully at the end of the month, where I think this is going to matter the most. But it's fun. It's fun for Jazz fans who want to get a look at Lauri Markkanen. Of course, last year, his run in the FIBA EuroBasket tournament was really his huge breakout as a basketball player. I mean, we knew he was good. He was good at Arizona. He'd been good in Finland before, but never what we had seen last year. But he took that. The Jazz obviously learned a lot from it, and then he parlayed that into his success last season. And he looks like he's picked up where he's left off. Jordan Clarkson is in a bit of a tough spot. I do think he really takes it seriously that he gets to represent the Philippines. In fact, I know he's had to fight sometimes to be able to represent Philippines in these Asia tournaments that sometimes they haven't allowed him to do it. So I know this is something, and especially with the Philippines being a host country this year, he's been excited about this opportunity and continues to play well because he's Jordan Clarkson and he's a heck of a basketball player. I think the big story locally is going to be what Walker Kessler gets from this experience playing with Team USA. But, of course, Simone Fontecchio also out there playing. So there's a lot of action. There's a lot to tune in for Jazz fans that I think is going to be fun to watch. And it's going to keep August maybe a little bit more interesting than it traditionally has been for Jazz fans when the NBA season slows down.
Yeah, absolutely. Markkanen, in his first game against Lithuania, he had 24 points, 7 rebounds, 3 assists, 2 steals. He put up a shot at the buzzer. It missed, but his teammate was able to put it back in and give Finland a win at the buzzer. That was a great game to watch. Kessler, he didn't get much time on the floor in USA's game against Puerto Rico, but he did have an impact late in the game when he did finally get in. Fontecchio added 21 points against Turkey, showed off his sweet shooting stroke. Overall, all the Jazz guys were putting on in FIBA.
Yeah, we have not seen Jordan Clarkson yet. He hasn't joined the Philippines team. He will coming up before the end of the month, and we'll get a couple of practices in before. But he hasn't done any of their exhibition stuff so far. I think it was a good sign with Lauri Markkanen continuing to go back and play well. His big question going into next season is was last year a fluke? Was last year this weird one-off, which we have seen players jump up, win the Most Improved Player award, show that they can play, maybe not at a starting all-star level, which is what we saw from Lauri Markkanen, which is why I'm a little bit more inclined to believe that what we saw was for real. But we have seen guys spike and then dramatically drop back down to earth. That was not that. You got to hope that's not the case if you're a Jazz fan. You've got to hope that that's not the story for Lauri. And I suspect, continuing to see him play as well as he did against Lithuania in their exhibition game, that I think he's going to continue to be dominant. And then I think the second question is you hope he doesn't wear out, because that's a lot of basketball to play last summer. He played probably as much basketball this year with the Jazz, carrying that heavy of a load as he has. Of course, he was participating in the Finnish military right after the season ended, goes right into FIBA play, and then is going to come back and get the season started right away. You just hope he doesn't get too worn out. And I do think that is a major question for him. In fact, you look back at some of Joe Ingles' injuries that he had when he tore his ACL. the amount of international basketball he had played in the offseason, I think, really started to add up. And mixed with his age, I think it was too much on him. Now, I don't think that's where Lauri Markkanen is, and the Jazz are going to be careful to make sure that that workload isn't too heavy. But that's going to be worth noting. The number of international tournaments seemingly every offseason now, I think, is a big deal, and it's going to be something that Jazz fans and certainly the Jazz brass, as they manage their roster and kind of manage these minutes and still try and stay competitive, because I do think they are trying to make the playoffs this year, I do think is going to become a major question mark for the team.
As we cover FIBA, I do have a question for you that I think may have a different answer than what some people expect. Which Jazz player do you think will have the most important FIBA run?
I think the obvious answer would be Walker Kessler, but I actually don't think it's the right answer. I think Walker, his trajectory in the NBA, and because he's going to be the Jazz starting center next year and the opportunity he has, it's already kind of baked in. I don't know if he goes from this unheralded player to this star next year in the NBA because he gets this Team USA experience. I think it's going to help him. I'm sure practicing every day against Jaren Jackson Jr., playing against Anthony Edwards is really beneficial for him. I think that will help. I think the player who actually it's most important for is Simone Fontecchio, because I think there's a real chance he's not in the NBA 12 months from now. You know, if he doesn't shine this year with the Jazz, I'm not sure he gets picked up again, and he may just go back to Europe and have to compete and fight for a job and just continue to fight for his basketball career. And he's a good European player. He's a good overseas player. But is he an NBA player? Is he one of the top 450 players on the planet? And that's going to be the big question for him. And if he can have a breakout, not like what Lauri Markkanen did last year for Finland, he's not that good of a player. But if he can be a guy who leads Italy, maybe gets them out of group play, continues to play well, which he has done historically in international tournaments, if he can continue to do that and build off that and then get that confidence that Lauri got, not the level of performance, but the confidence that Lauri had, and bring that into the Jazz next year and find a way to break into the rotation, which I think is just going to be hard to do, but if he can be really good in the preseason and break into the rotation for the Jazz, he can carve out an NBA career, a long NBA career, because his skill set matches. He's a good athlete. He's obviously a terrific three-point shooter. He plays really hard, which I think is beneficial, and I think that's something that will continue to have to improve for him. But he does have that motor when he's engaged. If he can show that, I think he can be a long-term NBA player, and in fact, the Jazz could use it. Every team needs a 6'6", 6'7" shooter, the caliber of Simone Fontecchio. So if he has a really strong performance with Italy, carries that into the Jazz next season, which I bet you last year was just such a whirlwind for him. Brand new coach, brand new country, brand new league. That's a lot. Now he's got the same coach, same team, second season. He should be experienced. He should have an idea of what he's doing. He should have an idea of what to expect. So if he can carry momentum from the FIBA World Cup tournament back to the Jazz, play well in preseason, earn a spot in the rotation, he could become a long-term NBA player. So whereas Jordan Clarkson's established, he's got his contract, he's got his money, we know what the rest of Jordan Clarkson's career is probably going to look like. He's going to play a couple of seasons with the Jazz. He either stays here or he goes and joins a contender, but he's Jordan Clarkson. Lauri, his FIBA play doesn't matter so much as what he does with the Jazz next year. Kelly Olynyk is in a similar boat to Jordan Clarkson. We know who he is. I'm excited to see him play with Team Canada. I'm excited to see how many minutes he gets, because that Canada roster is loaded and is probably the dark horse to win FIBA overall. I know we talk a lot about Team USA as the favorite. Australia might be number two because they're loaded with NBA players as well. Canada is stacked and is on the verge of becoming a world power when it comes to basketball. It's insane to look at how deep that roster is. I think they've got 11 NBA guys on it. Maybe it's 10, but regardless, they have full rotations full of NBA players, and they're only going to get better because there's good young Canadian players still coming up through high school and into college. But we know who Kelly Olynyk is. Lauri, I mentioned, is going to be good. Walker's play in the NBA is going to matter more than I think what he does with FIBA this year. And that just leaves Simone Fontecchio as, I think, the obvious guy who's really got to build off of this and take this and run.
I want to go back to Walker with Team USA. Team USA looked great in the first game. The first half was a little bit rocky, but they pulled away, ended up by winning by about 40 in the second half. Something that I think is big, though, is Walker is alongside reigning Defensive Player of the Year, Jaren Jackson Jr., and Walker came in as one of the best rookies defensively. Not only a best rookie defensively, he was one of the best defensive rim protectors in the league.
Sure.
What does playing alongside a defender like Jaren Jackson Jr., who also has more time under his belt, do for Walker?
Yeah, I'll be curious if he mimics him on the offensive side of the ball or the defensive side of the ball. Defensively, it would make the most sense. You know, great shot blockers, a little bit different in their style of shot blocking, but we know Jaren Jackson certainly is more switchable. Offensively, even though they look so different, their movement is so different, because I think Jaren's so fluid versus Walker, who's still a little bit boxy. He's still a little bit, not clumsy, but just looks young. He's still coming into his body. Will he start to find ways to pick and pop the way Jaren Jackson Jr. does? And, you know, Jaren was doing that at Michigan State. Jaren was good at that coming into the league. Walker did it in high school, never did it in college, and did it a little bit last year with the Jazz. But I think that's going to be an important aspect. So I will be curious how Steve Kerr uses Jaren to open up the floor. Because you saw it, as soon as Walker Kessler jumped in the game over those last 5 minutes, like, it was exclusively pick and roll. And that's not what you're running with Jaren Jackson so much. It's a lot more pick and pop. If Walker can develop a little bit more of those pick and pop skills, he can be really beneficial and versatile in the Jazz rotation, because I don't know yet how Will Hardy plans to use John Collins. And maybe this is a whole other conversation, but John Collins, really, if he doesn't regain his shooting form, which he had 2 years ago, 3 years ago, and then obviously dropped down to 28% last season. John Collins needs floor spacers around him. You can't have Walker Kessler as a non-floor spacer and John Collins as a non-floor spacer together in the front court. I think that's a huge question, maybe my biggest question for the Jazz going into the season next year, because if those guys can't play together, John Collins almost exclusively becomes a backup center, because Walker's not going to not start. And John Collins is going to start, but maybe you have to pull John Collins off the floor 3 minutes into the game and then bring him back in when you sub out Walker Kessler, unless one of those two guys can shoot. And if John Collins can't, then Walker Kessler has to. So you probably have to test both of them early in the preseason to make sure maybe both of them can shoot. And that's not three or four attempts a game for Walker. He's not there, but it might be one or two, just so there's the threat that when he goes and stands out at the three-point line, you have to put a body on him, even if he's very rarely shooting. Now, if John Collins just starts hitting shots, it doesn't matter. It's fine. You can use Walker Kessler as you did last year. But if he doesn't, you have this $25 million a year man who is relegated to backup center play, and that's a really bad paycheck to be given a guy who can't be a starting forward and can't start next to one of the core young pieces on your roster. So that's a huge question. So does Steve Kerr, who has traditionally liked playing these small ball fives, obviously he did it with Draymond Green and has done it and won several championships in Golden State, and then even when he's worked with Team USA in the past, has had Bam Adebayo and didn't play those two together. He started Bam, he brought Draymond off the bench. Can he find a way to teach Walker a little bit more of those kind of fundamentals of being a stretch big, being a floor spacing big, not because he rolls to the rim and has vertical spacing, but has true floor spacing on the floor? That will be my big question for Walker, and maybe that's emulating Jaren Jackson to bring this back full circle offensively more so than just what he does defensively.
Absolutely, and like you said, Walker being a pick-and-pop threat, like, he doesn't have to take three threes a game. It's just being a threat.
Being a threat.
Exactly, like being out there, having to force the defense to make a play on him.
And by the way, he can do that as a passer. Now, that's not something he's going to get from Jaren Jackson Jr., who is not, you know, this upper echelon passer like we see in the NBA. And I will tell you, I think the model, the blueprint for Walker Kessler is Brook Lopez. I think that's who he becomes. I think that's the goal. I think if you want to have him reach his potential, he can be, you know, Brook Lopez might be top three strongest players in the NBA. He's got that huge frame. I know we went to that Milwaukee Bucks game. Chandler, we were sitting courtside. You just realize when you see Brook Lopez up close, he's a mountain of a man. He is a huge, huge person. And as big as Walker is, he just does not have that weight on his chest, on his arms yet, on his legs. He will get that. But Brook's also a pretty good passer. Great defensive player like Walker already is. And yeah, hits a couple of threes a game. Steps out and does that. I think that's the goal long term. If I were running Walker Kessler's career, that's where I would target him. That's where I would try and push him to have success. I think you can continue to develop that way. But Brook's passing is a big part of that. We know Jokic can hit the three. He doesn't shoot a lot of threes. I think people would be surprised at how few he shoots a game. But he's so dangerous as a passer, he can space the floor that way. If Walker could learn to make a couple of those passes at the top of the three-point line, he doesn't have to shoot the three at 35, 36, 37%. He can shoot at 31 or 32%, but make plays elsewhere for the offense and have value there. So there are a lot of ways that Walker Kessler can learn to space the floor, and actually Steve Kerr might be one of the best coaches to do it.
Let's preview the upcoming exhibition games for USA against Slovenia and Spain. They're going to be playing against Luka Doncic in that first game. And there's, of course, a lot of history between USA basketball and Spain basketball. What do you think about these matchups?
Two questions I have. One, does Walker Kessler get more minutes because these teams are bigger? Puerto Rico's really small. That was one of the things, I wasn't all that well-versed in the Puerto Rican team, but they have 1 7-footer in their front court. Now, European basketball isn't loaded with 7-footers like it once was. You're not going to get Jokic in this tournament. You're not going to get Joel Embiid in this tournament, some of the great centers in the NBA. Rudy is going to be out there, so we'll see Rudy Gobert. And if Team USA runs into France, they're going to have to have some size to match up with them. But there are traditionally some bigger players in FIBA. Does Steve Kerr feel like he has to put a 7-footer on a 7-footer if they're losing the rebounding battle? That will be the question. So we may see that with Slovenia. We may see that with Spain. They do have bigger bodies. But, of course, with Slovenia, how do you deal with Luka Doncic? No one's had an answer yet. I am curious if we see Anthony Edwards kind of flex that defensive muscle where he's really underrated on the defensive side of the ball. If he wants to become a superstar in Minnesota, we know how good he is as a scorer. He can really be one of the best defenders in the league as well. So I'm excited to see Anthony Edwards and that matchup. I also am curious. Josh Hart this morning signed an $80 million extension with the Knicks. I almost wonder, he was the one player who didn't even dress for Team USA in their last game, in their first exhibition. I kind of wonder if he didn't play because he was waiting to get that deal done and didn't want to get a late knee injury and not play because he rolls his ankle and the Knicks all of a sudden pull $80 million off the table. So he says, Steve, I know you're trying to work out your rotation, coach. Why don't you play everybody else and I'll wait till I sign this $80 million contract and then I will play. Because, by the way, against Luka Doncic, you're going to need Josh Hart. You're going to need one of the best perimeter defenders in the NBA. And, in fact, Josh Hart is kind of custom built for what the international game is. Stretches the floor, rebounds, does a little bit of everything off the ball. I love Josh Hart's game. So I think he can be really key for this Team USA team. I don't think it was an accident that he signed his deal today and didn't play in their last game, and I bet he does get a chance to see the floor this weekend. So those are my questions. Does Josh Hart enter the rotation? How does Anthony Edwards continue to look on the defensive side of the ball? And then with teams with better size, does Walker Kessler get out there? He may not. Walker Kessler just simply may not be a huge part of this roster. I hope he does, but it's a good experience regardless.
Adding on to that, Anthony Edwards-Luka Doncic matchup. In December, the Mavericks and the Timberwolves faced off. Luka shot 8 for 16 and had 4 turnovers with the Ant-Man guarding him. Yeah. So that's definitely something to look out for. One more question, then we can get into the mailbag. What do you think of the Jazz offseason so far?
I'm curious if it's done. I could really see the Jazz. And, of course, there's the Damian Lillard stuff. Not that the Jazz are going to get involved with Dame himself, but will they be the third team that lands Tyler Hero, knowing that I think Danny Ainge and Justin Zanuck love a deal? And I know for some reason, and I get it, Tyler Hero's got a bit of a bad reputation because he didn't play and they made the finals. And in fact, they looked better without Tyler Hero. His playoff history is kind of a tale of two cities. I'm probably saying that wrong. He's got two different stories. His run in the bubble was magnificent, but he was in the bubble and he was playing close to home because he's in Miami. You know, they were in Orlando, but he's not far away from where he was used to playing his rookie season. And he had a ton of success and was great and was one of the reasons Miami made the finals. And then since then, when he's been in the playoffs, he's not been very good. His play is a little bit up and down. I wonder if he wasn't burdened with trying to get that Big Max contract. And he earned it, but he did get it. But I wonder if that bothered him. He is a sixth man of the year. He is a little bit repetitive for what the Jazz already have. He is a Jordan Clarkson type of player. But you know what? He can dribble, pass, and shoot. And those guys tend to make it in the NBA. And yeah, he makes a lot of money. But if you can get a young player and all you end up doing is throwing an extra draft pick and some contracts you don't care about to Portland or to Miami in this deal just to satisfy everybody, I wouldn't rule that out. And in fact, I wouldn't frown upon that. It's essentially the same thing you did with John Collins, right? You got a guy coming off his lowest value. John Collins had a bad year last year, so you bought him cheap, and you didn't give up anything to get him. If you can do the same thing with Tyler Hero, I think those are smart deals, because if you have to redirect Tyler Hero a year from now, 2 years from now, you can probably get a better return than you gave up for him, and that's just smart asset management. So I wouldn't rule that out. I still, I forget that some of the players on the Jazz are on this roster because I just don't know how they get on the floor. I look at some of the guys on this Jazz team, and I think, man, are we going to see that guy for the first 4 weeks of the season? Like, if you want to play the rookies, and I do think you do want to play the rookies, how does a guy like Talen Horton-Tucker see the floor? If Keyonte George is as good as we think he is and looked at Summer League and was only getting better before that ankle injury, I don't know how he plays. I don't know if Bryce Sensabaugh ever sees the floor this year. I don't know how he sees the floor. But if he's good, that's even more minutes taken away from guys like Simone Fontecchio, who we mentioned, guys like Talen Horton-Tucker. So it's just going to be really hard to get minutes, and maybe the Jazz make Will Hardy's life easier by consolidating the roster, by packaging some of those contracts to get one player or to get a future pick or something like that. I still would not rule that out. So I don't think the offseason's done, but I like their draft quite a bit. Certainly the summer league was intriguing. Would have been fun to see Sensabaugh and fun to see Taylor Hendricks. We didn't. But Keontae George was certainly worth the price of admission. And then I think John Collins was a huge addition. I think Jazz fans are sleeping on how good John Collins is going to be because I think he bounces back. I think he was in a nightmare scenario in Atlanta with not very good coaches until he got Quinn and had a sword hanging over his head for the last 2 years, 3 years, because he's been on the trade block. I mean, every day they're talking about, when are they going to trade John Collins? When are they going to trade John Collins? Finally, he's free. He steps in. He has a place where a team believes in him and probably builds a system a little bit around him. And I think he's really going to floor. So I like the John Collins addition. I like the draft. I think that's been a good offseason. I think it's been a very good offseason for the Jazz. And I think Jazz fans will recognize that once we actually get into the year.
I agree. I'm very ready for the season. Preseason kicks off early October. Speaking of THT, he was playing in the Chicago Pro-Am League, and he was looking pretty good. He was moving fast. I mean, you have to take off-season videos against non-NBA competition with a grain of salt, but he did look good.
And he's what, 22, 23 years old? I mean, he's still such a young person, but he looked trim. And I'm curious what the Jazz mandate for him was this offseason, because he knows the opportunity he got the second half of the season after the All-Star break, when Jordan Clarkson was basically resting the whole time, Lowry was in and out of the lineup, Mike Conley was gone, Colin Sexton was hurt. He got a ton of minutes. He's not going to get carte blanche in 30 minutes like he did the second half of the season. He is also fighting for his NBA life this year. He's in the final year of this deal. It's a contract season. I expect him to come in like gangbusters, in really good shape, and play his butt off. Now, he plays hard. Is he going to shoot well? Is he going to continue to pass well? Can he play well at a low usage? Like, there are huge questions for Talen, but looking like he was in better shape is a good start. That's a good start, but yeah, I'm not taking a whole lot. Like, yeah, he made layups against a bunch of high school players. A lot of guys do.
All right, let's get into the mailbag. First off, do you think participation in national games potentially affects players' regular season play?
Who tweeted this? Do we have the Twitter?
Yes, we do. It is from... sorry if I mispronounce this, Gilad Perry.
Okay.
And also, does commitment to the national team have added value?
It does. I think this level of experience is really beneficial. And maybe just working with these different coaches is really beneficial. I mean, the Jazz have a very good coach in Will Hardy. As good as Will is, he's not Steve Kerr. You know, he's not Eric Spoelstra. Mark Few is on this staff. Like, there is Tyronn Lue is on the staff. Tyronn Lue might be the best adjustment maker in the NBA. Like, he makes better adjustments as a coach than anybody else. So he teaches Team USA how to do that, tells them what to look for, and then maybe Walker Kessler next year mid-game says, oh, Will Hardy's not talking about this because he hasn't made these adjustments in-game, but I'm recognizing it. I remember Tyronn Lue said, hey, when they do this, I got to do that. And it's not that Will Hardy doesn't know it. It's just that he's also got 10 other things on his plate in that actual game, and you know, you see Walker Kessler just trigger that immediately, automatically, without having to be told. I think that type of stuff is important. I mean, Spo is the best coach in the NBA. I'm surprised, actually, Spo's not running this show. Maybe he didn't want to be the number one guy, but Steve Kerr is probably number two. You know, those are the two best coaches in the NBA right now. And then throw Greg Popovich in that conversation. And, you know, obviously Kerr is in that group and has worked with Pop when he was actually on the floor and playing for the Spurs. There is a... there's a ton of talent in that coaching staff. So I think that might be as beneficial as playing with some of these other young guys. And then, you know what? I think being in the group matters. I think being one of the guys matters for a lot of these players and feeling like you belong. A curse that Gordon Hayward had was he never felt like he belonged. He wanted to be an all-star. He wanted to be accepted. He wanted to be loved. And that's kind of a uniquely American thing. You want to be an American star. You've got to make the all-star games. I didn't realize this. Like, they don't do all-star games in Europe. It's not a thing. I did an interview with a Finnish news station, and they were like, give us context on the all-star game. We don't know what that is because we don't do those in EuroLeague. I was like, okay, yeah, it's a huge honor. It's a big honor, but it may have been a distraction for some guys like Jokic, Lowry obviously knew about it, and maybe playing college basketball in America helped him. But that might not be the end-all be-all that it was for a guy like Gordon Hayward. But being involved matters. And I think that will really help a guy like Walker Kessler, knowing Mikal Bridges going forward, knowing Anthony Edwards going forward, having the respect of those guys, recognizing you belong, getting to go back and play with Team USA, because he will be on the select team, I bet, next year. He's not going to be on the Olympic team in Paris. He's not going to Paris. He would have to really be dramatically better now and make a huge climb to make that roster next season. But he will go and play next season against the true best players in the world who are on that Olympic team next year, because he'll be on the practice roster, essentially. That will be beneficial. And because there's a true lack of young American centers, and you do need to have size still and shot blockers, there's a real chance he is on an Olympic team eventually, and this is that first step for him.
All right, moving on to questions from Jazzy Jeff, Utah and Jazz. What is the latest you have heard on the upcoming streaming service that Ryan Smith teased?
That seems to be where the Jazz continue to either still be working out issues or are mum on the issue still. I think they are really celebrating having it on KJazz and over-the-air broadcast television, and I think that will check the majority of the boxes. And then, of course, everyone outside of the state can just subscribe to NBA League Pass, which is not that expensive anymore, and get it that way. In fact, if you're outside of the state, and I could be totally wrong on this, don't hold me to this, it probably is going to be cheaper to get League Pass than to get whatever the Jazz streaming option is going to be, if you're outside of the state. But of course, if your only access is streaming in the state, you can't get League Pass and watch Jazz games. So that's kind of where this little window is. So in a sense, it may not end up being that huge of a priority, because it addresses a much smaller group of people when you think of full population. But I honestly, I have not heard. I know Ryan Smith wanted to run it through the actual Jazz website. The league actually has restrictions that doesn't allow you to do that. Some of the places, the other teams that have tried streaming in the past, the Clippers last year specifically, it was a disaster. They had, I think it was close to 5,000 subscribers. I mean, 5,000 in the city of Los Angeles. So that's a disaster. So it will be new. I'm excited to see how it works. I will certainly buy it and test it, because just I want to know what that product looks like and what it feels like. But having it on KJazz and then having access to League Pass is going to be an extremely huge benefit for Jazz fans, considering some of the issues they've gone through in recent years. Which, by the way, compared to other teams around the league, Denver had issues with altitude. We were just talking about the Clippers. It's actually not that bad. The Jazz offer, the fact that you've actually had access to all 82 games has been better than even what some other teams have had.
Definitely something to look forward to for Jazz fans. Jeff is specifically asking about Keontae with this question, but I'm going to expand it to all of the rookies. Do they have any preferred nicknames yet?
I know Jazz fans were calling Keontae Key. And, like, I mean, the fact that Keontae is basically Keynote, or, I mean, you're going to get that. And you don't want to get too crazy with your nicknames, right? Like, you don't want it to be so far off from what their actual name is that it doesn't make any sense. His name's going to be Key. And I even saw some Jazz fans pushing back against Key. It's a good name. Nobody else is named Key. You've got Kai and Kyrie Irving. But there's no one else named Key. In fact, historically, I don't know any Keys in the NBA. Mm-hmm. So, yeah. And it's going to be corny. You know, and I will write a headline that says, George, key to Jazz victory. Like, I will write that this year. I promise you I will write that this year. But it's a good nickname. It's fine. I don't know what else you would call him. I don't know about Taylor Hendricks or Bryce Sensabaugh. They're going to have to earn it by being on the floor. But their names don't generally lend themselves all that great. Their initials aren't that great. TH for Taylor Hendricks. You've already got THD, so that's out. And then Bryce Sensabaugh, like, you're not going to call him BS. Like, you're not going to call him BS. But I will write no BS since about the real deal. And I'm revealing my headlines. I'm going to put that out there. If he's good. If he's not good, then I'll say Sensabaugh draft pick, BS. Whatever. So, no, I don't know what their nicknames are yet. But, yeah, it's going to be Key for Keontae.
All right, last question here, and it's a good one to end on. What would the Jazz brass need to see this season in order to consider it a success? Loaded question.
Yeah, right, because, you know, Danny Ainge may call it a success if he ends up with three additional future first-round draft picks and the Jazz win 26 games. Like,
exactly.
That's a success. That is the freedom that the Jazz have right now, and I don't think fans want to reckon with that necessarily, that, like, success has so many different faces for the Jazz, because really it's just about still positioning yourself for winning a title 4 years from now, 3 years from now. It's not about this season, and it's not even about next season. It really is probably about 3 and 4 years. So if you get closer to that, whether that's through asset accumulation or by really establishing yourself as, you know, let's say, you know, the Denver Nuggets of 3 or 4 years ago when they broke through with Jokic and they made it to the conference finals. Again, it was in the bubble, but they kind of showed, like, we have these high heights. We can actually, when it comes together, when Jamal is clicking, when Jokic is clicking, we're good enough to compete at the highest level. I would be surprised if the Jazz can get to that point. I do think the Jazz can, not easily, but fairly safely make the play-in tournament if they want to. In fact, I think they could have made the play-in tournament last year had they wanted to. They wanted a top 10 pick. They got a top 10 pick, and we'll see how Taylor Hendricks pays that off. But I don't think just making the play-in tournament makes for a bunch of happy Jazz fans. I do think you want to see a big step forward from Walker Kessler. I think you want to see one of the rookies hit. So yeah, I'll give you a square answer. Lowry continues to play at this level and maybe even takes the next step. That would be huge. That would be the best thing that could happen for the Jazz. If Lowry goes from top 25 player, which he is today, to a top 15 player, top 10, which is not out of the realm of possibilities for a 7-footer who shoots 40% from the 3-point line and can get to the free throw line, like, you can become a top 10 player. If he does that, that's the best sign the Jazz could have this year. Absolutely no question. That's the best thing that could happen to the Jazz if he turns into a number one guy on a high-level playoff team. You know, you could say De'Aaron Fox kind of did that. You could say Sabonis kind of did that. I think you need to be better than both of those guys, even though that's what the Kings did last year. So I would say that would be number one. I would say Walker Kessler taking another step forward would be step two. That would be the number two sign of success. I think one of the rookies proving that they're a part of this top three core, better than Jordan Clarkson, and not to be better next year, but have the trajectory to be better than Jordan Clarkson. The trajectory to be better than John Collins would be huge. And you're young and you have team control. That's the only reason I would put them above John Collins, who I think at number four, probably he and Collin Sexton, if one of those two guys can prove that they're a part of this long-term conversation, a long-term starter, those would be really huge. So if you want actual practical advancements of what I think would make Jazz, the Jazz brass smile, I think it would be those things. I'll give you those four in order.
Although the forward position is stacked in the NBA, I could definitely see Markkanen making a run for All-NBA next year if he can make that jump, like you said.
I think he should have made it last year. I thought he should have made it last year. I think, in fact, he should have made it over some of the guys who did make it. But I get it. All-NBA is extremely exclusive, and it was his first year doing it versus some of these legacy guys who were going to get in on legacy. But if he does it again this year, if he has the same season he did this year, plays a couple of more games, and the Jazz make the play-in tournament, he has to be All-NBA.
What an episode. We went over FIBA, Jazz players playing in the FIBA tournament, the Jazz offseason so far, a little bit of rookie talk, and ended off with a mailbag. I'm looking forward to keeping this going throughout the season.
Every Tuesday, you can find us at kslsports.com. You can also find us on Apple, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts. Just search the Jazz Notes Podcast. I'm Ben Anderson, this is Chandler Holt, and you can find us on Twitter as well.